Hey, it's Brian Cook, your host here. Wanted to let you know we now have t-shirts. Would you like to support the podcast? Have you noticed that I can't get a sponsor because this show's too filthy? Hey, it'd be great if some people ordered shirts. They're great looking shirts. Go to estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com. You'll find competitive erotic fanfiction on the right-hand side. Click on that and you can order shirts. There's men's and women's sizes. It's a great design by my buddy Mark Palm in Seattle. He does all of our amazing poster art. Please support the podcast. It would help us out a ton. That's estoymerchandise.com. E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 131 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Upcoming shows include July 8th, live at North Bar in Chicago, July 9th at the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, Indiana. July 10th and 11th, I'll be doing stand-up opening for Ian Carmel, also at the Comedy Attic in Bloomington. July 12th, I'm headlining in Indianapolis doing stand-up at Sabbatical, and then July 19th, back at the Virgil in Los Angeles, competitive erotic fanfiction, free show. Today's show is from the Virgil in L.A. on June 21st, 2015, where we celebrated the third anniversary with a championship edition. This is round one featuring Jim Hickox, Lisa Curry, TJ Chambers, and Solomon Giorgio reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy. Please give up your first round one competitor who has brought a prepared piece this evening, Mr. Jim Hickox, ladies and gentlemen. Jim Hickox.
We open on a thrumming, sticky jungle night. A single blade of yellow light cuts across the jungle floor from a small makeshift shanty.
Hey there, big guy, says a familiar velveteen voice.
Dr. Banner whirls on his heels in his bamboo and palm frond hut. Rather Spartan accommodations. Its rustic aesthetic matched only by its remoteness. The only thing out of place is the spread of scientific doodads and all manner of condensers, distillers, and beakers. I told you not to look for me. He turns back to his microscope.
Too bad, fella. We've got some unfinished business, you and I. See, some people are saying that I was a widowed damsel in distress and I needed to be saved, fulfilling a cisgender archetype of male dominance.
Banner looks over his shoulder. That's the biggest load of shit I've ever heard. If anything, it was you were the only one that had every situation under control while us boys cocked it up. Well, the internet... Fuck the internet!
Whoa, the other guy is definitely awake.
Banner's billowy bullshit Tommy Bahama blouse was suddenly taut against a rippling muscular back.
A deep breath, a pause, and Bruce is back.
Hey now, hey.
Natasha slips in smooth as a breeze between Bruce and his experiments, deftly cradles his face in her hands and presses her hips against his bulge. A sweet, tender peck on the lips is what starts it all. It escalates. Heads, lips, and bodies rolling in sync. The sounds of lips smacking and deep nasal breathing align with the drone of the jungle around them. Her hands move to unbuckle his Tommy Bahama linen pants.
But there's no class, just a goddamn waistband and strings. Jesus, Bruce, are you hanging out with Sammy Hagar or what? You dress like Marlon Brando hungover in Miami. With a small flick of his wrist, oh, there's a button on the fly, and out pops a nice knobby cock ready for a frolic.
Bruce peels Black Widow out of her skin-tight leotard, revealing her Jesus-tight skin. Everything is in the same place. She seems to be only wearing it to be polite. Banner begins to feast on her bountiful bust, suckling and netting her tits like a hungry puppy. Her loins have become sodden and fragrant. It's go time. Banner slides a sizable member inside her. She shudders with pleasure, and Bruce is whisked away. All the rage and rejection inside him effervesces. He's on the other side of the planet, but he's never been more close to home than he is right now. They're thrusting in harmony, gasping and sweating, lost inside each other, approaching that inevitable, bountiful, agonizing moment of trembling orgasm.
Black Widow, true to her namesake, wraps her legs around her lover's waist, locking her feet behind him, digging her heels in his back, assuring she'll catch every drop of his seed. But the intimacy is utterly shattered as we hear the clank of two metal-clad hands clapping. Wow, this has to be the worst Airbnb I've ever seen. Iron Man has entered the building, ladies and gentlemen. He tries to raise his faceplate to no avail. Inside his visor, what should be displayed is the naked form of the world's sexiest super assassin, but his view is occluded by a giant censored rectangle over her nude state. Jarvis, what the fuck? Sorry, sir. Director Fury says it's only decent. But I can see Bruce's ass. Jesus, Banner. The other guy is way less hairy. You need an esthetician. Come on. Let's go back to the old grind. Pardon the pun. Outside the hut, the other Avengers, Cap, Thor, and Vision are present, each hoping this ends peacefully. Banner, teetering on the brink of orgasm, brow pearled with sweat. His eyes go wild. Did she betray him? Natasha can read this on him plain as day. No, no, no. Her eyes plead. Damn it, Stark, she shouts, still tingling inside. We're coming back. Wait until we finish. Well, I couldn't tell. They've got this puritanical bar thing. It sounded like you were done. Kudos for stamina, Bruce. I've already jizzed all over the inside of the suit. Turning to Bruce, I wanted to give you what you wanted before we went back, big guy. Natasha pleads. I want you to know what we're fighting for. It's what you boys always fight for. Pussy. And love, but mostly pussy. Even with how good he feels, how hard he still is inside her, how divine and pure the love he has for her, how coaxing and warm she is inside, it's too much. And his blue balls start to turn green. Ah, shit, says Stark. What's happening there? Asks Cap. You don't want to know. Oh, man, this is going to get messy. Natasha, dismount, like, now, but it's too late. The first thing to hulk out was Bruce's manhood. And it's filling her up inside like a bike pump. That's when her first orgasm hits. Fuck! She digs her nails into his arms, coital fluids dribbling down what was once a cock, but now more closely resembles two stacked veiny paint cans. Banner continues to transform, the Hulk emerging, Black Widow being transformed into basically a finger puppet slash hood ornament. Most women would have split in two, but those Russian broads are tough as hell. They could birth a train in the dead of winter. She's in ecstasy, a cascade of orgasms as she's whipped around on the Hulk's tumescence. Iron Man darts outside. Cap, close your eyes. This is way too 21st century for you. The hut explodes in a roar and rain of rattan and bamboo. The Hulk tries to remove Natasha, but her psoas muscles are locked on tight. There's no way she's bailing on the ride of a lifetime. Begin a clumsy body fracas, each Avenger trying to subdue the Hulk, not kill Black Widow, and even more important, not to piss off the goddamn thing anymore. The only consistent thing is her Doppler-like moans of pleasure as she's slung around like a fat spring breaker at the end of a bungee cord. Cap blocks punches with his shield, each blow pushing him down into the jungle floor. Tony darts around like a fruit fly, dodging punches and swats in an attempt to exhaust the beast. Thor's the only one strong enough to fight the fucker, but the more pissed off the Hulk gets, the bigger and stronger he gets, and Black Widow already looks pregnant with cock. Vision, with his poise and quiet android sentience, remains still. He's thinking. Rage got them into this. What's the opposite of rage? How can we quell the savage beast? Well, music. But I don't think a Requiem will do the fucking job, and the goddamn Boston Pops wouldn't fit in the Quinjet.
This is about pleasure.
Sensory overload might do it. Please the beast. With his knob buried up to the girl's ribs at this point, he does seem less aggressive than before. Vision put his hands on Thor's shoulder and says, "The instant I look at you next, I need you to use your godly lightning to strike me."
Might kill you, half-man.
Doubtful, and this is the only recourse.
Vision soars up into the air. The Hulk doesn't seem to care. He's too busy smashing his fellow Avengers. Smooth as a stiletto, Vision is behind Banter, and he unsheathes the cock so perfect it looks like a goddamn purple and chartreuse Bugatti. What God's dick would look like. The android element continues to unlock and unfurl into all manner of dimensions and attachments, all smooth and rounded like an Eames chair of penetrations. And it is with this miracle of design, the hybrid of human and machine, that Vision thrusts through the tatters of Bruce's Tommy Bahama linen trousers and into the Hulk's whale eye. his balloon nut, his shit divot. Vision starts coring out the Hulk's asshole so completely he'll need a stunt double to shit afterwards. This sensation is beyond foreign to the beast. So fueled by pain and rage, it gives him pause. It feels so good. Even with this tiny human on his bell end squirting, screaming, and coming, dribbling fluid all over his hulky balls. This so good. Calmly, Vision nods to Thor, and a crack of lightning surges through the air and into Vision. That is all he needed to get him over the top. The Hulk comes. Black Widow's belly swells as she howls in beautiful agony. She's fired out the monster's cock like a bottle rocket, with a jizzy comet trail following behind. You can even hear a distinct whistling sound as she's propelled into the horizon. Hell, he might have just jizzed her into space. All eyes go from sky to ground. We see that our dear Dr. Banner has returned. Vision has politely withdrawn his butt wand and reholstered it in some panel or cabinet in his body. Grimy, sweaty, and exhausted, the Avengers catch their breath. Well, fuck, now I actually do have to go help her.
Jim Hickox, Slim Eric. Keep it warm up here a second, competitor, Mr. Solomon Giorgio.
How you doing, Brian?
Good, buddy, how are you?
I think I've outdone myself this time.
That's what I like to hear.
Okay. In honor of Father's Day, I'm going to tell the story of the day I was conceived. Oh, okay. The year? 1981. It was a hot spring night in the outskirts of Khartoum, Sudan. A small community of Ethiopian refugees began settling in for the night in their makeshift homes. In the midst of the silence stood my father, leaning against the front door chewing licorice root. Beads of sweat slowly forming at the base of his magnificent afro. He was wearing his Seattle Supersonics NBA Champions 1978 tank top. He had no idea that the Washington Bullets actually won that championship, and his tank top was unsellable in the United States. Over the tank top, he wore a Day Glow orange Adidas track jacket that he stole from a nearby market. A pair of shorts that stopped mid-thigh and exposed the world to a 10-inch scar that he got when his best friend accidentally tripped a landmine. He also had on his favorite pair of braided leather sandals. They covered his foot fungus, but still allowed his toes to breathe. My father spit out the licorice root and grabbed the bottle of ouzo he'd been drinking from all day. The bottle was almost empty, and the world was becoming more and more fuzzy. He set back into his home and placed the bottle on a small tin table he made with his own hands. The bottle immediately slid off the lopsided table and crashed to the ground. My mother shushed him. She was laying on a twin-sized cot breastfeeding my sister Yordanos. "The children are asleep," my mother whispered. My father looked at the other cot that occupied my older siblings, Jamal, Terhas, and Neguse. The obnoxious children of my mother's previous marriages. My brother Neguse annoyed him to no ends. Just the other day, he ran up to my father and said, "Are you my daddy now? Are you talking to me?" my father questioned. It was a funny question to him because my poor brother was cockeyed. A kick to the face by a mule when he was barely 2 years old caused his left eye to become a wanderer. "Yes," my brother answered, covering his bad eye. "I can't be your father because I'm still alive." My father retorted and immediately went into a cackling laughter, drowning the sound of my brother crying. My father stared at my slumbering siblings and let out a noxious fart. He breathed in the rancid smell of spicy Ethiopian food and ouzo diet. "You're disgusting," my mother snapped while she removed her nipple from my sleeping sister's mouth. My father stared at my mother's exposed breast. He reached his hands down into his shorts and began to drunkenly massage his flaccid cock, feeling the blood rush to his circumcised penis. "This is just the beginning. There's more." My father caught my mother's eye. She placed my sister next to her and let out a sigh. "Okay, but make it quick." My father drew a smile and headed towards my mother. He took off his shorts, exposing his throbbing erection. He was too drunk to take off the rest of his clothes. My mother laid on her side and covered my sister's eyes. She lifted her nightgown and displayed her sweat-glistened butt and labia to my father. My father laid down beside her. "Don't try to put in my asshole again," my mother snaps. My father let out a drunken chuckle and gave my mother's rectum a quick jab with his penis. "Don't," my mother snapped while pulling away. "I'm kidding, I promise, I won't put in your asshole," replied my father as he pulled my mother back towards him. My father began to insert his penis into my mother's vagina. "It's so dry." "It's so dry," whispered my father as he pulled back out. "Well, if you want a wet pussy, you can lick it first," my mother hopefully responded. "I don't lick pussy, I'm a man," replied my father as he hopped a huge loogie into the palm of his hand and then slabbered my mother's vagina and covered it with his fresh spittle. He hopped another loogie and stroked it on his possibly 8.5-inch to 9-inch cock until the moonlight reflected off of it. He put his penis back into my mother and whispered, "That's much better." Minutes pass as my father thrusts his penis into my mother's vagina. My mother stares off to the distance, imagining a time before my father, before the children, before the deaths of her husbands, before the war. A simpler and happier time. My father's thrusts become more vigorous. My mother snaps back into reality. "Don't come inside of me. I don't want another bastard child." My father is mid-orgasm, but pulls out as quickly as he can, letting the remainder of his cum land on his track jacket. The juxtaposition of the jism in contrast to the Day-Glo orange almost looks like a Jackson Pollock painting. After a brief moment of silence, my father takes off his track jacket, looks at my mother, and says, "Don't forget to wash this tomorrow." My parents fall asleep. Inside my mother's uterus, the surviving members of my father's load immediately go to work. Racing up against my mother's uterine wall, cutting around the corner into the fallopian tubes. Straight ahead, a released ovum is slowly bobbing in their direction. The ovum has waited 28 years for this moment. An opportunity to find the sperm strong enough to crack its walls and form a life. A chance to be a being in the world instead of a soulless entity trapped in the darkness of my mother's ovaries. The sperm race towards the ovum with ambition. Thousands of them crashing against it, tearing away at the exterior of the ovum. One of the sperms starts to push the others aside. Excuse me! Excuse me! Y'all need to back up! It is my time to shine. With the force of 1,000 divas. The little upstart sperm breaks into the oven and exclaims, "Honey, I'm home." The morning sun breaks through the windows of the little house in Sudan. My mother's awoken by the sound of my sister crying next to her. My father profusely drooling on her shoulder. My mother slowly places her hand on her belly as she stares at the dirt ceiling and whispers, "Fuck. I'm pregnant again." The end.
Solomon Giorgio. Keep it going for Lisa Curry.
I totally forgot about this show, so I just brought you guys something else. So for those of you that are not aware, during the summers of 1976 and 1977, the Son of Sam terrorized New York with his serial murders. And on May 30th, 1977, he actually sent a handwritten letter to this guy named Jimmy Breslin, who was a columnist for the New York Daily News at the time. Portions of the letter were published, and portions were withheld because the police thought that people would feel sorry for him if they read it. A friend of mine works for the paper, and she actually sent me the full letter. So I'm going to read it to you now. "Hello from the gutters of New York City, which are filled with dog manure, vomit, stale wine, urine, and blood. Hello from the sewers of New York City, which swallow up these delicacies when they are washed away by the sweeper trucks. Hello from the cracks in the sidewalks of New York City and from the ants that dwell in these cracks and feed in the dried blood of the dead that has settled into the cracks. I come to you clawing my way out of a tortured mental abyss, my own personal hell in which I am slowly rotting from the inside out. My name is David Berkowitz, and I am the Son of Sam. For the past 10 months, I have been prowling the streets of New York, picking off victims at random to quell both the emotional and physical anguish that I feel. Since my return home from the service, I have been repeatedly forced into sexual misconducts by none other than Satan himself. Night after night, he slithers into my apartment through cracks in the floorboards, reforming into a hulking beast at the foot of my bed. The first time this happened, I had returned home early from work to find that dumb fucking neighbor of mine blasting the Hall & Oates song Rich Girl on a loop as his dog barked relentlessly. Driven to madness by this, I began scrawling occult symbols onto my walls before I passed out drunk. It must have been nearly 3 a.m. when Satan creeped into my apartment. David, he growled as I awakened in a pool of my own urine. I trembled a moment with my eyes still closed slightly, praying I was having another terrible nightmare while the stench of his decaying flesh hurtled me into reality. David, he growled again, the bass of his voice vibrating the windows. I slowly opened my eyes to see an unimaginably grotesque creature before me, a revolting amalgam of many beasts. The Lord of the Underworld was covered with gaping wounds, oozing pus in places where patches of fur and scale once were. At nearly 8 feet tall, he towered over me, heaving under the weight of his own carcass. For a moment, I found myself mesmerized by his presence. The devil himself was in my home. Certainly, I must have summoned him somehow. Then suddenly, without warning, he jerked me from bed and slammed me into the wall, pinning me off the ground with his talons. I'm going to fuck you, David, he barked. Centipedes rushing out of his mouth. I tried to scream out for help, but realized no one would ever hear me over the unreasonable volume of my neighbor's record player and his dog's nonstop fucking barking. Tears streamed down my face as Beelzebub shred my piss-soaked underwear to bits. He turned me around and pressed me into the wall with so much force that bits of drywall crumbled to the ground. He reached up and first grabbed my balls, squeezing them so hard that they ruptured. Unable to cry for help, I clenched my teeth until they started to crack. Grunting like a charging bull, Satan traced a single claw along my taint, splitting the skin open as he went along. So fucked up. From there, he ran his hand down his own bulging thigh to his gargantuan cock that was strapped to the interior of his leg. God fucking damn it, I thought. Of course the goddamn devil has a huge cock. Once free, his cock raised itself upright like a cobra being taunted by one of those fucking annoying flute things. I was able to turn my head just enough to see it fully. To my increasing horror, it wasn't the cock of any animal, but what had to be the biggest leech in the fucking solar system. It approached my anus cautiously, dripping mucus off its slimy body into the cracks of the floor. It began pecking at my asshole, tearing bits of skin each time it pulled away. By now, the pain was so immense that my body fell numb. Just as my mind began to follow suit, my neighbor's record player started to skip, repeating the lyric, "It's a bitch girl," over and over. Jostling me back into my grisly reality. Satan's bloodthirsty leech cock was now inside of me, slinking its way in further and further until his dysmorphic form pressed against me, boiling my flesh with his oozing viscous sweat. The stench that filled the room was a blood-curdling mixture of my own boiling fatty flesh and what I'd identified as sulfuric acid seeping out of Satan's pores. My body seized, but I was too weak from blood loss to vomit. As his leech cock throbbed harder and harder inside of me, Satan constricted my upper body with his own, squeezing tighter and tighter until he climaxed, discharging my own blood back into my anus. As he came, he let out a booming, guttural, gorilla-like noise and fell to the floor, rattling the building. As I lay crumpled on the floor, struggling to process my reality, I watched him breathe. His body decomposed before my eyes, turning back into a thick, black sludge as it disappeared into the floor. As the last of his remains vanished, I heard my neighbor's record player fade out and finally turn off. The dog had stopped barking, and I was once again alone in my Yonkers apartment. Mr. Breslin, sir, I do not want to kill anymore. No, sir. No more. But I must.
Lisa Curry! And keep it going for Mr. TJ Chambers.
Sup, dude? Spilling some whiskey. Hi, guys. Dr. Spoo and the Time Whores, a choose-your-own-fuck-venture. And guys, if we die even once, we can't go back, so don't fuck this up. The afternoon bell clangs at Pine Middle School, jolting you out another one of your swashbuckling daydreams. Your teacher, Mr. Cook, grudgingly ends another of his meandering and needlessly vitriolic lectures. At last, the school day is over and your real adventure can begin. The rest of the kids begin a mad dash out the front and onto the curb to get picked up and taken to either soccer practice or their Theravada Buddhist meditation for preteens class, depending on whether or not this story takes place in Los Feliz. But not you. Your mom works late and you think maybe she has a new boyfriend. So you run down the hall, past the janitor's closet where you're pretty sure Mr. Cook lives, and out the back, stopping next to the dumpster into which you once saw Mr. Cook chucking the entire class's diorama projects. Turn to page 6. As if on cue, a familiar whooshing sound fills your ears. Appearing in front of you and lurching to the ground with a worrisome thud is an old blue police box. but you know that it is really Doctor Who's spaceship, the TARDIS, because you've seen it portrayed on the protective iPhone 6 case carried by every girl who wants to come off as quirky cute, like she might move to Portland and try stand-up. You haven't seen your friend the Doctor since the last time he regenerated his appearance, and he could look like anything. Anything. The door to the TARDIS flies open. If you want to see a straight white British male, turn to page 17. If you want to see literally anything else at all besides a straight white British male, turn to page 11. Fuck you, you're shit out of luck. If you want to go home and write a think piece about how Doctor Who is always a straight white British male, turn to page 36. You guys want page 36 for the think piece or page 17 for the straight white male? 36 for the think piece. 36. With visions of Patton Oswalt retreats dancing through your head, you sprint home to get cracking on your surely world-changing think piece. Your tone will be irreverent but haughty, you decide. No sooner have you fired up your MacBook Air, though, than the whooshing sound returns, and the TARDIS lands right there in your room next to your TARDIS bunk bed, you goddamn nerd. The door flies open, and much to your surprise, the Doctor looks very different. He's still white and shit, but instead of a foppish British man, he looks like the fat guy who played Eckhart in Tim Burton's Batman. He wears a tobacco-stained Charlotte Hornets jersey and denim cargo shorts. Get in here, I'm supposed to watch you until your mom gets done with the night shift, he grumbles. Oh no, your brave, brilliant, universe-conquering friend the Doctor has somehow regenerated into your mom's shitty boyfriend. To brave the smell of corn nuts and step into the TARDIS, turn to page 21. To turn and run like any sane human would do, turn to page 146. 21, walk into the TARDIS, turn and run 146. 21, we're walking into the TARDIS. I love it. 21. Ever the adventurer, you step firmly into the dimly lit TARDIS. You are shocked to find that, for the first time, it isn't bigger on the inside. It's about the size of an RV and similarly decorated. Your eyes begin to adjust, but before you realize what you're looking at, you hear a bone-chillingly modulated electronic voice call out. Ejaculate, says the voice. Now you can see it. A shuttlecock-shaped creature, which you know to be an evil Dalek, has his plunger arm cupped firmly over the crotch area of a polished chrome Cyberman. What could they be doing? Doctor, are they fighting, you ask? Yeah, sure, whatever, responds the normally verbose doctor. Get in there and do battle or whatever. To push the doctor into the mix instead of you, turn to page 41. To plunge in bravely and do battle with these two remarkably similar yet uncreative supervillains, turn to page 9. Push the doctor in, page 41. You go on yourself, page 9.
41!
41! I heard a lot of 41s. As you watch the robotic battle coitus unfold between the two alien creatures, you decide that this is a fight for the doctor, and not some kid who picked up this paperback at the book fair in the multi-purpose room and was unfairly thrust into the action via second-person narration. As you push the doctor into the fray, the Dalek stops plunger-fucking the Cyberman's robo-wang, and they both turn their attention to the Time Whore. Instead of talking the bad guys into submission, much to your surprise, the doctor hastily removes his clothes. You knew that Time Lords had two hearts, but this is a Time Whore, and you know what that means. Two dicks. Not even pausing to lube up, he starts fucking the two intergalactic machines, each violent thrust causing one or both of his Doctor Who dicks to regenerate into a different form. Big then small, veiny then smooth, circumcised then uncircumcised. And other descriptors that hopefully distract you, the audience, from the fact that the author of this piece really only has his own dick to compare things to. Finally, the Dalek, the Cyberman, and the Doctor fuck so hard that they open a rift in space-time. Because we're all pseudoscience-y enough to think that we maybe know what a rift in space-time is. The last thought you have before the rift swallows you up is, damn, I wish I would have jammed one of my fingers so hard into the previous pages of this book, then I could have gone back and undied. But sorry, fuckers, life doesn't work like that. You guys died. That was the earliest death. It was the earliest death. It's been a bit. Yeah,
sorry, guys.
You guys died. You fucked up. It's not my fault. It's not my fault.
TJ Chambers, I'm here. Your final round one competitor, Mr. Dave Ross.
What's up? What's up, Ryan? How are you? How are you? Hello. Great. So I didn't want to write anything. So I decided I'm just going to read the comments people left me in my high school yearbook. This is really what they wrote. You're not going to believe what these people wrote in my yearbook. This really is my yearbook, by the way. Clock Tower 2000. That's what they call it. That was the brand of my yearbook, Clock Tower. Because there was a clock tower. All right. Okay. Hey, Dave. You're great. I'm going to miss you. Don't forget about me all the way out there in L.A. You're so funny and so smart. And also really cute, LOL. And you're good at sports and a great writer and really funny and probably going to be a great comedian one day. And you're just really impressive in every way. Stay in touch. I'll always remember you. Love, the hottest girl in school. P.S. What does LOL mean? This is the year 2000. All right. Dear Dave, remember how we used to skip class together and smoke weed in the woods behind the school? Me neither. You were a loser. I remember one time I tried to get you to drink alcohol by handing you a water bottle with vodka in it, but you took a huge gulp and spit it out all over the floor and we both got kicked out of gym class. I am positive you will never have sex. Though I do want to have sex with you because I am a hot girl and you are also really hot and interesting and funny. Love, Danielle. Dave! It's Amanda. Remember that time I blew you in French class? Me neither. We're positive you're gay. Though I should add that you are incredibly attractive and smart, and all the girls in this school wish you weren't gay, even though unfortunately you are gay, definitely. I hope you change, Amanda. Dave! It's Mike. Remember that time I blew you in French class? Me too. Man, I really loved sucking your dick in French class. It was great because no one knew. No one except you and me and the teacher, Mr. Tulin. I loved how sometimes Mr. Tulin would end class early and make you and me stay because we were, quote, in trouble. And then the three of us would just spray cum on each other. Just so much cum. We'd dance around in our underwear, giggling and twirling and blocking the cum from our eyes like kids playing around a broken fire hydrant. There was that one time that James Chapone and Bobby White showed up, two of our other classmates, and they hadn't done their homework, so Mr. Tulin made them write, "I promise I will cum hard 100 times on the chalkboard," and then they double-stuffed your asshole and blew their load simultaneously right as the bell rang. What a coincidence. Aw, man, I loved eighth grade. Then there was that other time that Danielle and Amanda showed up, and we were like, "Get out of here!" Anyway. Have fun in California. Don't turn gay. Mike. P.S. Never be gay. Okay. Hey, Dave, remember that time you put your dick in my ass at lunch? I almost shit everywhere. You're so crazy. Good luck in California. Mike again. Hey, Dave, I'm going to miss you, man. All those shows we went to, all those late nights at theater practice. You're the best, dude. Also, you suck the best dick. Don't be gay, though. Fuck California. Bobby. I am the first one to sign your crack. Also, to put my cock in your ass crack. I loved it when I fucked you in the ass in math class. Love, Bruno Mars. Hey, Dave. Mike here one more time. Remember how Lou Hoffman and his little brother Austin Hoffman and Sathish Shanthan and you and me and Bobby White and James Chapone, who I mentioned before, and also Mr. Tulin and Mr. Spencer, the English teacher, and Kevin Alstrup and most of the soccer team and the entire golf team and everyone who played drums in jazz band and not one single girl all used to fuck in the parking lot? How do we never get caught? Life is crazy. I love you. Keep blowing people. Mike. Dave, I don't know if you remember me, but I used to bully you. I was real tough. I was a big, bad, tough guy, and I fucked a lot of girls, and I drove a sweet car, and you seemed really weak, and I hated you for it. I called you gay a lot. Remember that? All the time, man. Me and my friends. We called everyone gay. It was actually kind of the tone of the entire school. Lots of calling people gay.
Well, I just wanted to say that actually, I had no idea what homosexuality really was back then, or sexuality at all. I called you gay because I thought you were weird. Anytime someone's weird, I call them gay. Because I don't understand weirdness or being gay, and when I don't understand things, I think they're the same and I hate them. A few years from now, I'm going to find out that my dad cheated on my mom with a gay man for most of my life, and that knowledge is going to throw my entire existence into a tailspin, and I'm going to realize that judging people for their gender or sexuality or really anything at all is both destructive to them and destructive to me, because homosexuality is not at all bad and doesn't conflict with any of the characteristics that I value in people. In fact, my father being gay proves that homosexuality aligns directly with the things I value, and that all this time that I thought being gay was bad, I was just subconsciously angry that the feminine and homosexual parts of me had been suppressed by both my family and American society for my entire life. Anyway, I just wanted to congratulate you and everyone like you on being correct that femininity is a virtue and that sexuality doesn't define us, and to apologize to afraid teenagers everywhere for both intimidating them and confusing them. I'm also aware that you sometimes called people gay in high school, too, and that you're really ashamed of that and feel terrible about it. I hope you do something one day that makes up for that. Also, goddamn, you can suck a dick, Bill. Thank you.
Hey, Ross, hey, you can sit right here, man. Get everybody from round one back up. Big round of applause for all of your round one competitors. All right, so I'm going to remind you of what everybody read, and then you will be voting with your applause on a winner, but no voting yet. These are just reminders. We started with Jim Hickox with the Avengers. Then Solomon Giorgio with his own conception. Lisa Curry, Son of Sam. TJ Chambers, Choose Your Own Adventure. And Dave Ross with his yearbook comments. So pick a favorite with your applause, starting from Jim Hickox, the Avengers. Solomon Giorgio, his own conception. Lisa Curry, the Son of Sam. TJ Chambers, Choose Your Own Adventure. They're just mad because they died. Finally, Dave Ross with his own yearbook comments. All right, so that's real close between Solomon and Lisa. We're going to do a runoff. Pick a favorite, starting again with Solomon Giorgio, his own conception. Lisa Curry, Son of Sam. Lisa, you had the rowdiest votes for sure, but I think the most went to Mr. Solomon Giorgio, your round one grand champion. Let him hear it. That's quite a good job, everybody.
That does it for round one. To hear round two, you can download episode 132 next week. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. And for details on upcoming shows, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.